Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Welcome into episode 214 of The Toolset with Clayton Cross, powered by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm your host, Eric Cross, and with me, as usual, is my 80-grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clay. Chris, what's going on, bud?
Not too much. Just another good night to chat ball. We've got a good guest on. And we're going to talk some Dynasty, and that's always a good time. AJ Smith-Shawver made his debut today, which was awesome. He shoved in 2 1/3, 3 Ks. So pretty good start, or relief outing there. And fun to see him, 20-year-old, debuting with the Braves. So that was a lot of fun. It's been a good weekend for sure.
Yeah, it's still crazy to think about. Like, that dude was just in high A like a little over a month ago, and now he's pitching out of the Braves bullpen, and like you said, he's shoving right now and probably will the entire season. Like, that's another how do you guys keep coming up with these arms? Like, this not like, I don't think Strider came out of nowhere, and it's not like AJ came out of nowhere, but it's like they were never like super highly thought of prospects until they just like completely blew up in their respective years. Like, how do you guys keep doing this? Like, you got some like gypsy magic down there in Atlanta or something, dude?
Dana Brown, who's now the Astros GM, was the director of like scouting and development. He's just amazing. So there's a reason he's the Astros GM now. So we'll see if the Braves can continue doing this. I hope so. But yeah, Brown was a big part of that, in my opinion.
Well, you have your entire like core like locked up for like a grand total of like $12 million a year. So yeah, it's like 8 different players. So I think you guys will be all right for a fit there. But as Chris mentioned, we do have a guest today. First one in a little bit. We've had a spell without some guests, so figured we'd get a guest on today. We were talking about Dynasty Points Leagues, you know, a lot of info about them, some players that maybe gain or lose value in them. So figured why not bring on a guy that, you know, specifically handles Points Leagues here. You can find all of his work over on the Dynasty Dugout Substack that Chris runs. _Beck on Twitter. Mr. Zach Beck joins us. Zach, how you doing, bud? Thanks for joining us.
I'm good, guys. Thanks for having me on. I was listening to you guys do the intro and feeling like I probably could have done it myself. I've listened to it so many times. So what's that saying? Long-time listener, first-time caller. It's great to be here.
Yeah. Glad to have you.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. Like I said, we're talking some Dynasty Points Leagues today, and that's what Beck covers over on Dynasty Dugout. He's got a lot of great stuff over there. We'll let him get into that in a second here. But before we get into all of the fun Points League stuff here, the usual housekeeping, you can find us on Twitter, again, at @upper_Beck for Zach Beck. Chris is at RotoClegg. I am at EricCross04. Show is at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoy the podcast, please rate and review. And make sure to check out both of our personal platforms. Obviously, Chris's Substack I just mentioned, and my Patreon for more work from each of us, including our prospect and dynasty rankings and Zach Beck's dynasty and prospect points leagues rankings as well. And to start off the show, we'll give you the floor here, Beck. It's let people know, you know, give a little bit of background about yourself, what you do, all the great stuff you got going on over on the Dynasty Substack.
Yeah, I just got it started writing like last fall. It was kind of a perfect confluence of factors. I just moved away from all my buddies that I would normally spout baseball nonsense at, especially fantasy baseball nonsense. And it's a lot to text when you're watching so many games and have so many takes. And so, you know, I've been following you guys for a while and a lot of other folks. I actually reached out to Halp, the imaginary brick wall, and said, like, I'm thinking about starting to just put some thoughts down on paper. And he was like, just do it. What's stopping you? Go for it. See where it takes you. And then I was at the AFL and I was like, I'm keeping such good notes here on every player and they're going to live to see no light of day. So I might as well put them down and get them out there. And it's been super fun so far. It's all points league stuff. So, you know, for the last however many years I've been playing points leagues for both redraft and dynasty and doing this kind of mental conversion of roto ranks and analysis for points leagues. And it, you know, it worked out really well that there's not a ton of people doing points league content out there. So the first one that comes to mind is Taylor Case at the Dynasty Guru. I enjoy some of his work. So if there are points league fans out there, go check him out too. But yeah, it's been a ton of fun. It's been, you know, half a year now, and I feel like I'm kind of getting into the swing of things, but also realizing how much work this is. Folks who update rankings on a monthly basis, it's crazy. It is the people really pumping out content live for this stuff.
Yeah, and that's something Chris and I have found out over the years. That, yeah, it's a labor of love for sure, but it you can definitely tell when someone, you know, maybe it'd be hard for other people to see this, but like when you see someone's work, you can really tell like who enjoys doing what they do, and you can definitely see that with your stuff. Obviously, like you said, you love points leagues and whatnot. So let's kind of start with like the general kind of like overview, like, you know, why should somebody play in a Dynasty Points League? Obviously, we have so many different formats out there these days. Obviously, you know, most of us grew up on head-to-head when we were younger. Obviously, Roto is really probably the king of the formats at this point in time. But, you know, Points Leagues, like you mentioned, there's not a lot of content out there. So why should somebody play in a Points League?
Yeah, one of the biggest draws for me in Points Leagues is that you can make it kind of whatever you want it to be. They're extremely customizable. Every action on the field, you can assign a different point total to. And that makes like an endless world of possibilities. When I'm talking to people about ranks, it's, you know, it kind of cuts both ways because I can't make points rankings for every league out there, but you can really build a league that you feel passionately about. So say, for example, I wanted to really value speed. That's something that I could do. So that's really attractive to me. You can prioritize elements of the game that your league mates think are important, or even emulate, you know, the product on the field. Auto new points leagues do that. So the offensive scoring is based on the coefficients of WOBA, which is super cool. And pitching is FIP based. So, you know, like earned runs that aren't home runs are not a factor in FIP. So you can do a lot. That league can look like however you want it to, and you can really build the league of your dreams. So that's a big one. Another one is that like head-to-head points leagues are going to be, they bring that Sunday night thrill that you get with fantasy football. I was just talking to Jeff Ponce about this on the Dynasty Dugout Discord. There is nothing quite like, you know, in a head-to-head points league going into Sunday night baseball and knowing exactly what you need your players to do to notch a win for that week. I think, you know, I joke about when my kids are learning math, I'm going to just get them in some points leagues and they'll know how to add up things really quick. But yeah, the head-to-head aspect is super fun. You can even throw in like median scoring so that you're playing against a head-to-head opponent and you take out some of the variability that a head-to-head matchup is going to bring. And then the last piece that I don't think a lot of folks talk about when it comes to points leagues is it's a real growth lever for fantasy baseball. A lot of people come over from fantasy football, which is, for better or for worse, probably a bigger fantasy game. And they come over and they try points leagues for the first time. They're not going to dive right into Roto. It brings more eyes to all of our work and to the game, and, you know, grows the sport. Mostly because they're intuitive. You know, it's simple, but it's not easy. And people can get really invested really quickly and then graduate to other formats like Roto or try some of the big competitions like the NFBC or whatever it may be. So there's a lot of good reasons, I think, to play points leagues. They're a ton of fun. The head-to-head is super fun. You can customize it however you want. But also, like, people in the industry should be rooting for it too. It's a huge growth lever for the game, and it's not zero sum. If people are playing points, they're consuming all kinds of content. I can speak from experience for that. So I'm a huge fan. I've been playing them for all my life. I think more folks should try it, and it's good for everybody.
Yeah, I'm curious, like, was your first league like a head-to-head points league? And was it a dynasty league? Like, I assume probably not, but how'd you get into dynasty from that?
No, so I was a big redraft player when I was in high school. It was almost bigger for me than football was at the time. I was a huge baseball nerd then, and I still am now. So playing points, redraft, head-to-head in high school, you know, probably 4 or 5 years. And then when I was in college, actually, I got super into fantasy football. That became like everything. And then after school, I was like, you know, I do still really enjoy baseball. That is still my number one. And started a dynasty points league with some of my college buddies. And it really blossomed from there. It's a huge league. It's a 2014 league. But I think that's how a lot of people get into it, is they start with redraft points and they eventually fall further and further down that rabbit hole.
Yeah. So would you recommend, like, someone that's looking to get into, you know, fantasy baseball in general, whether it be redraft or dynasty? So would you recommend in general people start with a points league?
I think so. I think, like I said, it's very intuitive. Everything that happens on the field, you know, just like in football, is going to either positively or negatively contribute both to the team on the field playing the actual sport and to your fantasy team. And like, the beauty of it is your league tells you exactly how much everything is worth. A lot of it is math based. And so preparing for something like that and knowing what the value of an incremental stolen base or home run or save is a lot easier to understand than, if I get a save here tonight, what is that worth for my team? It's way easier, in my opinion, and I'm biased here, to get invested in what your players are doing when you have that kind of immediate feedback. How much was that worth?
No, yeah, absolutely. And you brought up a good point with kind of like how it correlates to fantasy football. And, you know, because I only play in a couple fantasy football leagues. It's definitely a lot further down my priority list than fantasy baseball, obviously. But, you know, obviously, and I follow some fantasy football people and or some of my writing buddies that do both, like David Mendelsohn, for instance. But you see a lot of people that are like, oh, what I need so and so to get me 16 points tonight or whatever it is. So yeah, that is like the fun, and I've had fun with that too. Like going to Monday night, you're like, oh, I need like Ramondre Stevenson to get me 12 points or something like that, or I need you know, this person on the other team to not get 12 points, whatever it is. So it does have that little extra element of fun, a little extra wrinkle. So yeah, that's definitely a fun thing for sure. Now, obviously, there's, you know, it's very much customizable. Do you have like a specific format that you like to play when it comes to points, certain point settings, or anything that it's kind of your standard?
Yeah, I usually, for all my rankings, I just reference Fantrax standard. I ran a poll kind of before the season started, and that was by far the winner in terms of platforms too. I just prefer Fantrax's UI, and their standard scoring is, you know, not too bad. I think it plays pretty similar to a lot of the customized point scoring. I think where a lot of points leagues go wrong with their scoring, you always hear like, hey, you know, I'm playing in a points league and pitching is super overvalued. I can never trade for it. I can never pick it up. Usually that's because you're putting too much value on things like pitcher wins. So Fantrax standard, that's one of the things that I don't love, is they put 10 points for a pitcher win. And usually the pitcher has very little to do with whether or not they notch a win, or they're giving way too many points for innings pitched. So guys that are going to be innings eaters but not very good are going to rack up points like nobody's business. And that's how you end up with, you know, at the end of the year, when you look at your scoring settings or your, you know, your final standings of players, the top 50 is like 35 pitchers. And then it's just the most elite bats that crack that. So those are, you know, two of the bigger things that I don't like. And some points leagues do really interesting, novel things for, you know, like a cycle or a complete game or a no hitter. Those feel like kind of dogpiling. You know, if your player's hitting for the cycle, he's already scoring a lot of points. If he's throwing a complete game shutout, you're probably already getting points for everything that he's doing there. So I like to take the bonuses out too. It's cool to watch. It's extremely, you know, fun to see on the field. But in fantasy, that's not something that you really need to give a bonus for. So those are, I think, the most common is like innings volume, pitching wins and losses. Sometimes quality starts can be an issue too if you're giving huge bonuses there. And then weird bonuses for things like cycles or no hitters.
Yeah, you bring up a good point. I think pitching is generally way overvalued in points leagues. And until, like, I guess most people aren't adjusting scoring settings. Like, so if you're in a current points league that pitching is way overvalued, what would you suggest a player do? Like, if you need pitching and your league just way overvalues it, like, what's your suggestion in a points league?
Yeah, it's interesting because it's kind of a different scenario whether you're talking redraft or dynasty. Redraft, you know, it's something where preparation is really, really valuable. Again, your leagues are going to put out exactly what your scoring settings are. And we live in an age where there are a lot of projection tools. So run players through your league scoring settings and create your own ADP. Don't rely on, you know, what's happening in the NFBC or what's happening in your platform. Actually, like, you know, pull your players' projections and overlay the scoring settings to see how players are going to shake out. And projections aren't everything, right? You know, you can modify projections for what you think is going to happen, which is the beauty of it. But preparation is so, so important in redraft points leagues. And that's how you can jump on some of these arms that are going to be highly ranked on roto lists, but maybe not so much in points leagues. For dynasty, the biggest thing is, you know, there's the TinStab acronym. It's not necessarily true in points leagues, because if you hit on one, the value is just immense. And I think it still holds true for really, really young arms, right? Guys who are several years away who could still get hurt, you know, before making a debut or sidestep in their development. I like to load up on AAA guys that are close to debuting. That might be further down rankings list, because even if they can throw for a good amount of volume or, you know, maybe not have the best command but rack up strikeouts, they're still going to be really, really valuable. And often you can flip those hyped guys once they make a big debut for more established pitching.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you probably would have been in on who were some of those guys you would have been in on, you know, in that regard earlier on this season? Maybe the guys like we'll get the Schusters, the Andrew Abbotts, those types of guys.
Yeah, I tried to trade for Schuster everywhere. He's still pretty valuable in points leagues. The two that I was probably heaviest on were Bryce Miller. Probably should have moved on from him before that Yankees Rangers double step or two step. And then Brian Wu's another one that just came up. I'm a big Ben Brown guy. He's on the Cubs 40.
Love Ben Brown. You know, yep.
He's shooting up. That was a good one to get on in on early. Even lower ranked guys like Mike Vassell for the Mets is probably one that you can jump on. They're going to need rotation help at some point. So those are the kinds of targets where, hey, maybe check and see if they're on the 40 man. It's not going to be such a problem to get them up on the big league club and just see what happens. If they throw really well their first one or two times through the rotation, you can cash those out for more established arms.
Yeah, absolutely. Great points there. You also wrote a great article over on the Dynasty Dugouts about how to be a better player in a points league called the Dynasty Points Survival Guide. Obviously, don't want to give away the entire article. Would urge everybody to go over and subscribe to get the entire article, but maybe just give a Cliff Notes version or a couple bullet points of some of the top points from that article.
Yeah. The first half of it is really like, how are points leagues different than roto leagues? If, you know, you're a points league manager right now, how should you think about positional viability? We already touched on it. Starting pitching is going to be way more valuable. So if you're in a startup right now and you have an arm, you know, that you think is going to be 160 plus innings annually. Sandy Alcantara, I think, is a great example, even though this year's not going great. He's going to be a workhorse regardless. He's going to be really valuable. So innings volume, strikeout volume, those are important. Healthy ratios, you know, those are things that we focus on a lot in roto. Actually not as valuable in points leagues. So, you know, that kind of thing with starting pitching. relievers don't come, you know, with as much value in points leagues. Typically, some leagues feature a big bonus for a save. That's typically not true, so you can fade relief pitching. Hitters, like home run hitting, very important. That's the biggest point total you're going to get from a hitter. That's not a bonus. Also, limiting strikeouts in those K penalty leagues is going to be really important. All of this to say, there's a lot of, in the points league space right now, there's a lot of arbitrage to be done. And you can tell very quickly when a manager in your league is using cats-based dynasty list or prospect list. You can usually flip players pretty easily that are going to play better in points formats just based on, you know, the structure of your league and how points leagues tend to play in general. So, you know, different positions are going to play differently. A lot of it goes into how do I think about points leagues when there's different league sizes, right? So smaller leagues. I think this holds true for both points leagues and categories. The high-end talent is really going to rise to the top. I think that's where you get some of those lower-ranked prospects that I like to grab, pitching prospects, and flip them for higher-end talent. I like to condense talent there in points leagues, particularly on the pitching side. So that's one piece of it. And then a lot of it is like, how do you value prospects for points leagues differently than you would for Roto? So some of these guys, we really, really value speed. Anthony Volpe, you know, is one where he stole, I think he went 20-50 last year. And I'm, for the most part, just looking at the 20 and his OBP. And that was kind of something that jumped out to me is he's not going to play as well in points formats as he is in Roto. And I can capitalize on that by grabbing somebody that might be on prominent lists in the 30 to 40 range that's actually going to play better in my format. So a lot of it comes down to arbitrage. How do points leagues play differently than rotisserie leagues? And then the rest is really preparation. I've been super impressed with a lot of people in the Dynasty Dugout Substack. There's a fellow in there named Matt who showed me one of his spreadsheets and all of the projections he was running. And it's awesome. I think if you really want to get ahead, your preseason and offseason prep for points leagues can be pretty unparalleled. Everything is projectable. Everything is going to have a points value associated with it. So arbitrage and prep, that's 100% the name of the game in points leagues.
Absolutely. That was always like, that was part of the fun that got me into it. Just fantasy baseball in general was like all the fun, like prep work and making your own projections and all that fun stuff. That's for one of the many things that drew me into fantasy baseball in general. So yeah, definitely echo that. One other thing I wanted to ask you too, like, you know, in a dynasty startup, obviously we preach, and most people preach, it's like a normal like Roto format to load up on hitting early. Obviously with points leagues, pitchers having a higher, you know, importance in this format, but let's say you're heading into a startup draft, dynasty points draft, like how would you approach like the first, you know, 5-6 rounds or so to start like building your team out? Would you still go, you know, would you still have a focus on hitters early and try to get the values of pitching, or would you change it up a little bit?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's been a while since I did a points startup. I'm in 3 points dynasty leagues and they're all a couple years old, which I'm grateful for. They don't always last that long.
Right.
But, you know, honestly, the first thing I would do is I would talk to my commissioner and say, let's think about our scoring settings really critically. I think having a strong commissioner is super important when you're getting into a points startup or you're going to end up with some wacky values at the end. So get together as a league and really stress test your scoring settings before you start a draft so everybody knows exactly how this league is going to play. But then after that, you know, my first 5-6 rounds, I'm probably still going hitter heavy. Those are players that I can feel pretty comfortable about their performance in 3, 4, 5 years. If I have a win now build, you know, I might try some variation of pocket aces if that exists in Dynasty. But I'm for sure starting my draft, you know, 90% of the time with at least 2 hitters. Towards the 3rd round, depending on the league size, I might dive in with a pitcher. It's all about risk tolerance, I think. I usually want to have 2 pitchers by the end of round 6 that I feel really, really comfortable with, particularly with the amount of volume. So they might not be super high upside guys. Sandy Alcantara, like I said, is a great target. Framber Valdez, who we might talk a little bit about later, is a great target. So guys like that are maybe not as flashy, but I want to be out of round 6 in a startup with at least 2 arms.
Man, imagine if you did a Dynasty Point startup draft this spring and went with that pocket ace strategy, went with like Corbin Burns and Sandy Alcantara. Like, that'd be a little rough right now. Obviously, I think they're still going to be fine, but not the greatest seasons from them. Brutal. But
yeah, challenging. Sandy today, actually, I think he had a 5-run third inning after throwing 13 pitches to get through the first two. And he still finished, you know, in standard scoring with a pretty decent day because he went seven innings and didn't take a loss. So it was actually a pretty good day for him. He's a little bit bulletproof in the format as far as that goes.
Yeah, because like, regardless of, you know, if it's a good day or a bad day by the general population's eyes, like, he's still going to give you that volume. Like, how many times does he only go, like, three innings? Like, never, right? Like, yeah. This is a guy that leads major leagues in innings by a healthy margin over the last two, three, whatever years, ever since basically he became an established full-time starter. So, yeah, that's, like, probably one of the bigger variances this year in terms of pitchers. Like, if you have Sandy and it's, like, a roto head-to-head whatever, you're like, man, this guy's not giving me much. The K, you know, the K rate's not there. Obviously, the ratios are much higher than they were last year. But in point, yeah, maybe he's not quite as good this year as he was last year in points. Mm-hmm. But still a very valuable arm in the points format just because of that elite volume that he always gives you.
Yeah, totally. I got a lot of questions coming into the year about my prospect ranks, specifically my pitching prospect ranks. A lot of folks asking me, you know, shouldn't you be higher on Brandon Pfaadt? I was pretty high on Brandon Pfaadt specifically because I thought he was going to give you great volume and help you out this year. If, you know, I was less high on him because I didn't trust the fastball necessarily. And his, you know, his command has been weird this year, but that's the kind of prospect where I think, you know, maybe he was 8 or 10 in my preseason prospect ranks for pitchers that you probably should target most of the time because they've proven that they're stretched out and they can go, you know, 150 plus innings as a rookie if need be.
That helps out a ton. The volume is a pretty big deal. So, yeah, I think knowing the scoring settings is the most important thing in every league. Like, that's right. Obviously critical to know, like, don't get midway through a roto draft and be like, oh, this is OBP and not average. Because I've seen that done before. So, yeah, knowing the settings, knowing – and I think what y'all did, y'all – you helped start a points league in the with the Discord channel, and y'all, like, back-tested, like, all the settings, which was cool. And spend a lot of time in making sure it was good and balanced, which I love to see. So, like, know your settings. I know that's simple, but always know the league settings.
My favorite by far, and I think I see this almost every year, at least every other year. You'll be in the draft. It's two catcher format. You get into like round 7, 8, 9, and so there's one person that they see. I think I'm assuming this is what the thought process is when they see like, all these catchers flying off the board, and then they're like, oh crap, this is the two catcher league. Yeah, did you look at the roster like the on the side of the screen at all? That's my favorite one. They don't, when they think it's a single catcher league, then they're like, oh, why is this catcher going off the board at 50 when his ADP is like 112 or something like that? And they're like, oh crap, that's my favorite. Yeah, absolutely. Like doesn't that feel weird saying that, Chris, like knowing your settings? And but like really, like it's very simple but very effective and often gets overlooked. You just go into your draft like, oh, I know the players, blah 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 blah, and you don't like read. You need to do as much prep on, you know, the league as you do the players, and then that can hurt you if you don't.
Yeah, totally. And you could play, you know, points redraft 5 years in a row with the same group of people and never have the same scoring settings twice. So right. It's easy to get lost there. It sounds reductive, like, hey, pay attention to the league that you're playing in, but there are so many different scoring settings. I get so many questions that are like, hey, I play in a 10-point home run league. How would you value this trade? That does change the context quite a bit, you know? So it is super important, particularly for points leagues where roto, you might be dealing with the rogue. Oh, it's a two catcher. Oh, it's OBP. It could look very, very different at points.
Have you ever felt frustration with managing all of your subscriptions? I know I have. With all the streaming services we have nowadays, it can be difficult to keep track of them all. But don't worry, Rocket Money is here to help. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels all of your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps you lower your bills all in one place. Stop throwing your money away. Cancel unwanted subscriptions now and manage your switches the easy way by going to rocketmoney.com/toolshed. That's rocketmoney.com/toolshed, rocketmoney.com/toolshed. All right, guys, we've done a lot of just, you know, strategy and overview of points. Let's get into some nitty gritty here with some players. We each have two players on the list here that we believe are more valuable in just generic points formats than roto. Beck, obviously, as the guest and the points league aficionado here, why don't you kick us off with your first name?
I would love to. I'm going to pick a player that I've been touting for a while as one of my favorite players in baseball. That is Cleveland Guardians outfielder Stephen Kwan. contact guru. I pulled some numbers just because I wanted to make sure how different he plays between the formats. And right now in 2023, Stephen Kwan is the 73rd overall player in points formats. In 2022, he finished as the 64th overall player in Fantrax standard. Right now, he's the 153rd overall player in the Razzball Player Rater. So there is, you know, a really huge difference. And this is Fantrax standard doesn't have a K penalty. So he's playing up even in leagues where you're not penalized for Ks. And you can bank that value. It's one of the safest profiles out there. He plays way, way up in points. I have him ranked 101st overall. Just missed the top 100 in my Dynasty points ranks. Chris, I think you had him 188. That feels more appropriate for Roto given where he's at in the player rater right now.
Yeah, he's certainly, if there's a K penalty, then he plays way, way, way up. Like, because he doesn't strike out. The contact he makes is elite. So that's also something to take in. Like, I think we, in negative K points leagues, we're quick to like, okay, well, that player takes a hit. This player takes it. But we don't think about the players that get a boost from that too. And there's right. A lot of value to be had there. So that's a good pick.
Totally. That profile just plays up in general. There are a handful of players that, you know, are all birds of a feather that those players are great to target in points league. So if you're thinking about how do I build a better roster, look for the Stephen Kwans in your league.
Yeah, I was about to say the players that we often label as like boring or safe, you know, a couple of words that we'd probably use to describe Stephen Kwan. He's not the sexiest player around. I think everybody can admit that. He's just not going to go out to hit 30 home runs or steal 40 bags. But in this format, his profile definitely plays up. And I think that can kind of be how we describe this next player, too. He's a bit of a different player, but still a guy that would fall into the, you know, at least before this year, into the safe, boring, you know, lax upside, all those terms we want to use. So my first name is Jhonny Diaz here with Tampa Bay. Obviously having the, right now, so far, the best year of his career. And this was a guy that was already pretty valuable, I believe, in this format, just because he hit for average, he got on base, walked a ton, and didn't strike out much. You know, last year had 78 walks, just 60 strikeouts, had a bunch of doubles, 33 doubles as well, but only had 9 home runs. And obviously this year, he's kind of maintaining everything he did last year. Yeah, he's striking out, you know, a little bit more than he did last year. Not by much, though. Well, actually, yeah, it's only like 3% more in general. So I think he's on pace for like another 15 or 20 more strikeouts than he had last year. But at the same time, he's pretty much on the same pace for walks. And he's already surpassed his number of home runs for last year, on pace for right around the same doubles. So it's like he, you know, traded doubles for home runs. He still got a hit. Probably go over 30 doubles and at this pace, over 30 home runs. Well, obviously having a lot of run production as well, being in that Tampa Bay lineup. So yeah, obviously not a guy that to add any speed, 8 career steals and over 500 games, 0 this year. So, but this, the rest of that game is just so rock solid that yeah, Jhonny, I think is a great guy. I think he's a great value in anywhere right now, but especially in points formats. Would you agree with that, Beck?
Yeah, 100%. I didn't realize he walked more than he struck out last year. Which is, I mean, that's points league gold right there. I don't know if any of us realize this. He's the number 32 overall player in Fantrax standard right now. The 5th overall first baseman. He was 110th last year. So definitely a real step forward. But the profile, as you said, super safe. He's not going to strike out a ton. He, you know, is walking more than he's striking out. And the power is taking a step forward. That's, you know, that's a recipe for a breakout. And if your league isn't buying in yet on Jhonny Diaz, the 5th overall first baseman so far this year, a lot of it looks very sustainable. That should, you know, that should be in a points league targets article.
For sure.
He smokes baseballs, dude. He hits the ball so hard. But I'm going to go with another guy that's similar to Stephen Kwan, and I'm curious where he ranks in points leagues. I've Luis Arraez, I've got him up on the Razzball Play Rater. He's at 125, which is largely because he's hitting 392 right now.
I know. I keep waiting for that average to fall. Like, he's still hanging on to like that hope for 400.
Yeah, I mean, he went 4-for-4 today. Like, what's going on? Like, he's just, sorry, that was actually, sorry, yesterday he went 5-for-5, but 2 hits today. Like,
with Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to, has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time. No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Dude's just insane what he's doing. Now, he's valuable in a roto league for batting average, like, really only. But one home run, one steal, that's zero value for roto. Like, it's almost a drain in those categories. Like, at least Stephen Kwan provides some power and some speed. But Luis Arraez doesn't really give you anything but batting average. But the contact skills are just outrageous here. Like, not striking out at all. Like, he has a 5% strikeout rate to an 8.1% walk rate, which is nuts to see. The contact is, you know, just insanely good. Like, his overall contact rate is like 93%. Zone contact's up to 94%. So, like, he just makes such elite contact. He doesn't strike out, which is valuable. Do you have up where he ranks in points and Fantrax points?
He's 102 right now, Okay. Which, you know, the batting average is fantastic. I need to dig in a little bit more and understand why there's such a gap between Stephen Kwan and Luis Arraez. Very, very similar profiles. Like you said, elite contact, excellent batting averages. Kwan, you know, not having as great a year as he had last year. He does have twice as many home runs as Luis Arraez, 2-1. So, little bit of a power edge there.
Ooh. I'd guess 10 stolen bases is a pretty nice boost. What is the stolen base points for in the Fantrax Standard League?
Yeah, let me pull that up quick. I don't play any Fantrax Standard. I just rank for it. So
yeah.
Stolen bases are 2 points.
Okay.
All right.
No penalty for caught stealing, though. So
yeah.
You want your guys to run often, I suppose.
Yeah, and Arraez just doesn't. like I said, at least Kwan gives you a little bit of speed. But it's funny. I think people were like hoping that Arraez would at least give a little bit of power this year, but that just has not been the case. Like, but like you mentioned, Chris, his contact rates are so elite. Like, his chase contact rate is 89.1%, which is higher than most, probably, I'd say 95% of the league's zone contact rate, which is just absolutely insane to. And that, it's been like that forever. Like last year, it was 89.4. He says his own contact rate above 90% every year, above 92% every year of his career. Whiff rate 26.9%. It's just absolutely insane. Like he knows what he's good at, and that's putting the bat on the ball, and he does that. And I would love to see him flirt with 400. Obviously, that's a long season. We still got another 100 and 105 games to go, so probably won't. But it's the reason why nobody's done that. And was 70? What are we at now? 80? Williams said in 41, so 82 years ago, almost 100 years ago, most of our grandparents weren't even alive back then. So, yeah. But who is your next player there, Beck?
This is a player I was banging the table for preseason. He was in my preseason targets article, which was mixed results there. This is not Jesse Winker. This is Framber Valdez of the Houston Astros, who is one of my favorite players in points leagues. I think he's constantly an unsung hero, especially if you're playing, you know, in a league that gives big benefits or bonuses for quality starts and wins. You know, he went on that historic run of quality starts last year. He was an excellent value in the format in 12-team leagues. You could probably get him in the, you know, fifth or sixth round, which is an awesome value for what he put up. He finished last year as the number 24 overall pitcher, I want to say. Number 24 overall player so far in 2023 on Fantrax Standard, 21 overall last year. So you can really consider him one of the elite players in the format. He's going to give you volume. He pitched almost 200 innings last year. The Ks aren't going to be there. It's not as sexy. I don't know if he's ever made a pitching ninja appearance. I think there was maybe one time in the playoffs last year when he was fiddling on the mound and pitching ninja put something out there about was it the sticky stuff situation. that's the kind of stuff that, you know, Framber makes the highlight reels for. It's not going to be the sexy stuff, but he gets it done. Really high ground ball rate. Can string together those quality starts. It's a huge, huge bonus in points leagues.
Yeah, when we were putting together like the outline, we had this section about players that had more value. Like my mind immediately went to Framber Valdez. Like that dude, I think it's in general. Roto, head to head, I don't even care what format. I think the dude's just underrated. Again, he's not sexy, but he just gets the job done. And, before this year, and I think you should put Sandy in as a pretty safe arm, but it was like him and Sandy were like, and Garrett Cole too, but like, there's that upper tier of just like the safe, bankable guys, and he is absolutely up there. And I think he needs more credit in all formats, especially this format. He's absolutely gold in this format. And another arm I love in this format is Kevin Gausman from the Toronto Blue Jays. This is a guy that, over the last handful of years has really come into his own as he got into his 30s here and came over to Toronto. Had a lot of strikeouts, getting the volume the last few years, over 30 starts each of the last 2 years, made 10 starts in the shortened 2020 season with San Fran. This is a guy that gives you a lot of strikeouts. He had over 200 each of the last 2 years, 227 in 2021, 205 last year. He was on a over 200 strikeout pace in 2020 as well. And again, this year he's already at 100, and we just passed the third way mark of the season. So this is a guy that I don't think he's going to get 300 this year, but easily cruising, to another 200 plus, maybe even 250K a year. I wouldn't put that past him. And at the same time, this is a guy that does not walk many batters at all. He has a career 6.5% walk rate, and last year was a tick under 4% this year, up a little bit, but still at 5.9%. Obviously gives you the volume, gives you high Ks, low walks. This year has, he's got 4 wins, only 3 losses. What do you had last year? 12-10, 14-6 year before that. Just everything you kind of look for in the points of the guard. Like if you want to start your, this would be a guy I would really consider starting my staff with. Like one of the safest arms out there. And yeah, he's had a couple of blowups this year, but out of 12 starts, he has 9 quality starts and almost at a 10th. So I'd have to go back and look what he had last year for quality starts, but I'm assuming he was probably up at the leaderboard last year as well, finishing with 335 ERA over 31 starts. So yeah, he's absolutely his points league gold right there. So love me some Kevin Gausman in all formats, but especially this one.
I love that pick. He's fantastic in the format. I really like your point about if I were doing a points league startup, that's an arm that I would want to anchor my staff. I think both him and Framber Valdez, if I were able to go 2 bats to start and then double tap Valdez and Gausman, I'd be feeling really good through 4 rounds.
Absolutely. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, that would be striking gold through 4. Elite volume, elite strikeouts on a good team. There's not a whole lot more you can ask for there.
What about another boring type arm in Logan Webb, who eats innings? He threw 192 last year. He's up to 79 already this year in 12 starts. He has a 2.85 ERA, yet nobody talks about him. He's striking out more batters than he has in the past. Like he's 82 in 79 innings this year. Last year was 163 in 192 innings. So an improvement on the stuff. He's not walking many batters. Like Logan Webb is having a really good year and nobody's really talking about it. And I'm a bit shocked about that. Webb's valuable in obviously a roto format too. I think all these arms are valuable in roto formats, but those guys that can just go consistently deep in starts are very valuable. And that's what Webb does. If you just look at his game log, it's 7 innings, 7 innings, 7 innings, 6, 7, 7, 7, 2, 6, 2, 7, 6, 2. Like he's got on the list and he's throwing over 6 innings every start. And there's a ton of value to be had in that with the volume that you get, like with all these guys we've kind of talked about. But I think Logan Webb just stays underrated. 26 years old. He just keeps doing it year after year, even though it's not really sexy. The Arsenal's, not one that's going to wow you by any means, but he just keeps the ball on the ground with the sinker. He induces enough whiffs with the changeup and slider to be useful and keeps getting the job done. And don't tweet about him being overrated because he might DM you.
Yep, he sure might. But hey, I'll take the credit for I'll try to take the credit for jump starting his good season here. So that you're welcome, everybody. No, I'm kidding.
You lit the fire under him.
I did. Yeah, I'm fine with that. He seems like a good dude though. But yeah, definitely another arm. Again, we keep going back to these safe, boring, not sexy. Like, this episode isn't going to be titled "Bringing Sexy Back" or anything like that, because there aren't a lot of sexy names here. Well, in points for match, I guess these guys are sexy, right? Like, they might be safe to their, you know, safe and boring and roto or head to head or whatever. But in points for match, you know, Framber Valdez is sexy. Gaussman, Webb, you know, Luis Arias, these guys are sexy. And I think that's the only format you can recall them sexy in. But
it feels awful sexy to own these guys in points leagues. And I'm learning very quickly, if the pitcher can keep the ball on the ground and I don't see him on Pitching Ninja's Twitter feed, he's probably a good bet.
Yep, for sure. But let's go over to some guys that had a difference, a sizable difference between Chris's ranks and Beck's ranks over on Dynasty Dugout, starting with Vinny Pasquantino, obviously longtime favorite of yours truly. I've always been a big Vinny P guy. And now, Chris, so these numbers here, I forget. So Beck's are on the left and yours are on the right, correct?
Yes, I think that's correct. Okay. You put that in right, so that's right.
Yeah, yep, those are my notes there.
Okay. Perfect, yes.
Okay, so that's what I thought. That's what I want to make sure before I start referencing numbers here. So start with Vinny P, Beck has him 31, Chris has him 48. Obviously, Beck's are for points, and Chris is for roto. Keep throw that caveat out there once again. But Beck, what is something that gives Vinny P that extra little boost in points formats?
It's all the plate discipline and contact stuff that we covered with Stephen Kwan and with Luis Urias, except for he can hit the crap out of the ball. Obviously, extraordinary power with him. He is not going to get dinged in K penalty formats. I don't mind him in that ballpark. I think he's kind of a Freddie Freeman clone. And if I'm going to rank Freddie that highly, well, he's several years older, I got to put Vinny there too. I really believe in that profile, especially for the format. And I think first base is a place where you can often get a lot of very steady production. If I were to bet on one in the 25 to 50 range for the next 3 or 4 years, it would probably be Vinny Pasquantino.
Can't go wrong with that. Obviously, that's the reason why I've been so high on Vinny P. Both Chris and I have both been pretty high on Vinny P. You know, same thing going with like Kyle Manzardo. I think this guy's probably going to be points league gold as well. Not to get off subject, but I just had a thought. What if, and I don't know how long points leagues have been around, to be honest with you, but like, I feel like they were invented because of Barry Bonds.
Like, he would probably break points leagues too, but maybe not to the extent. Yeah, that's funny.
Like some of his early 2000s years was like 73 home runs, 177 walks, 93 strikeouts. Like that year, he had 232 walks and a 609 OBP to 41 strikeouts. I don't know why I thought of him in the middle of the episode. I'm like, man, Barry Bonds would have absolutely just like that year in fantasy football when like LaDainian Tomlinson had like 29 whatever touchdowns or whatever it was. And if you had him, basically you were, unless you completely screwed up, you won your league. You know, basically, if you had Barry Bonds in the points league back in 2003 or whatever it was, you would have just won your league off him alone.
I'll have to go back and just apply Fantrax standard scoring to
that
10-year stretch of his career and see where he would rank against, like, the best 10 seasons of in all of baseball for the last 10 years. That would be a really interesting exercise. I imagine it's a lot like owning dual-eligible Shohei Ohtani in in daily points leagues or any, you know, a weekly points league, even if he's dual-eligible. He just breaks the format. I imagine that's what Barry Bonds would be like, too. Another thought I'm having about Vinny Pasquantino is in my head, there's this long lineage of first base MLB players and prospects that fit the same or similar mold. It's like in my head, it's Freddie Freeman, Vinny Pasquantino, Kyle Manzardo, Tyler Locklear, and Nathan Martorella. They're like all the same, you know, very, very similar player. And that's the kind of profile that I would jump on really early too. So if Nathan Martorella is sitting out there for you, jump on that. I think he could be a really, really quick riser. And Locklear, for that matter.
That's music to Chris's ears. Obviously, Chris has been massive Tyler Locklear guy since last year's FYPD.
Yeah. Martorella's good, too. There's another one we'll save for FYPD episode that'll be in this year's class, too. Beck knows who it is.
I was going to say, there's a target like that in almost every draft class, and I'm super excited about this one. I won't spoil it, but there's about to be another one in the lineage there.
Yeah. Next name is Framber Valdez, who you already talked about. We don't have to talk too much in detail about him since you already did that, but you've got him ranked 36th. I've got him ranked 79th, which is probably pretty low at this point. I feel like I bumped him up. I do need to check.
Yeah, in your defense, my ranks are probably 2 weeks old, and yours are like a month old. So I've got some recency helping me out there too.
Yeah. So I just want to look. I thought I bumped. Yeah, I have Valdez 37 in my latest update. So he's one that I'm a lot closer on now. Corey Seager is the next name. You had him 42nd. I have him 54. I like Seager a lot. I think Seager is useful across the board. But what do you see in Seager that makes him more valuable in the points format?
Yeah, I mean, tremendous power for a shortstop. He's a good bet to put up 30 home runs in any given year. Good plate discipline. He's a great OBP play. So it makes sense that we are maybe closer on this one than any of the other ones. But I always used OBP rankings to translate, you know, when I was doing my kind of Rosetta Stone for figuring out who should I target in points leagues. Usually it made the most sense to follow OBP rankings because that kind of profile that's going to play well in the OBP format is something I would chase as well. He's just rock solid. I think a lot of people forget how good he's been throughout his career, especially in the plate discipline and OBP realm. And he doesn't get the kind of love that he should in points leagues because he doesn't provide any speed. And that's not going to show up in Roto rankings.
He just needs to stay healthy. Like, obviously, this is a guy that had any, like, high level of durability. I feel like he'd be, like, a universal. Let's say, Beck, let's say you could bank on, you know, him playing 150 games a year. You think he's a top 20 guy in points format or top 25, somewhere in that range?
That's hard. A lot of arms get pushed up in that range. You don't normally, like, you know, for Dynasty Roto, want to push arms up that high. Probably around 25, I would say. Let me take a peek at where I have, who's in that 25 range for me.
If you only have a 401k, you're not getting the most for retirement.
Wait, what?
Add a Robinhood IRA on top, then they'll boost it by 3%.
You can do that?
And if you transfer in any retirement account, you get 3% on top of that.
Is there a limit to the match?
No limit. Robinhood Gold gets you the biggest contribution match of any IRA on the market. Sign up for Robinhood Gold at Robinhood.com/boost by April 30th. Subscription fees apply.
Investing involves risk. 3% match requires gold for 1 year from first match. Must keep IRA for 5 years. Match on transfers subject to additional terms and conditions. Robinhood Financial LLC. Member SIPC.
That would be around Corbin Carroll, Zach Gallen, Mike Trout. So I could see him slotting in there. That would be behind guys like Mookie Betts and Bryce Harper.
Yeah. He's like, my ranking of him is like right in the middle of you guys. I have him at 45 right now. So yeah, obviously he's like a top 50 in Roto, and then obviously gets that nice boost because, man, if he just stay healthy, like obviously the power's there, the plate discipline's there. Like, he's never been a guy that struck out a ton. You know, I mean, this year, you know, walking a ton, and once again, keeping the K rate in check as he always has done, you know, hitting for power just needs to stay healthy. That's obviously been the big caveat with him. So, and I have him in a few leagues, so I hope he can. He's always been pretty rock solid when he's been on the field, but that's been the big issue. But another shortstop here, Xander Bogaerts, so you have at 52 and Chris has at 71, so about a 20 spot gap there. What do you like about Xander in points formats?
It's that rock solid profile. Again, it's, you start to see these player archetypes that play really, really well. He is going to hit for a great average, which translates to fantasy points in the points format. He doesn't strike out too much. The power kind of fell off a cliff and he's dealing with a wrist thing now. So I would probably drop him if I were doing a rank update right now. I'm hoping to do that sometime in June, but just a rock solid profile. The speed has never really been, you know, too crazy. That's often where the biggest delta is coming from. I'm also a huge Xander Bogaerts fan.
Me too.
I this is true. I took a trip to Fenway in 2013 and really became kind of like a makeshift Red Sox fan. So he's been one of my favorite players for a long time. I think it's just a rock solid profile that's going to play really, really well in points.
Yeah, so you saw him in his rookie year.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a pretty electric time. I think the Brewers were had the best record in the NL and the Red Sox had the best record in the AL. That might've been the year after, I'm not recalling, but it was a really fun time. And I followed the Red Sox fairly closely since then.
Can't go wrong with that.
Nope. I do think he's a better points play for sure than Roto. So justified ranking there. We cover the next two, Stephen Kwan, who you have at 101. I have at 188. And then Luis Arraez, who You have it 125, at 198. So little gap there. Obviously, both those, we talked about how they are more valuable. And you can talk a little bit about Sal Frelick, who you really like. He seems to fit this mold of just going to be points league gold. But so we'll let you talk a bit about him.
Yeah, him and the next guy are both in the Stephen Kwan, Luis Arraez mold. Sal Frelick is a guy that I've had inside my top 20 since the offseason for Dynasty Points prospect rankings. He makes elite contact, he has solid speed. You know, that's not something we always look for in points leagues, but I'm not going to say no to a little extra speed. And I think he'll have more thumb than Stephen Kwan. I think he's a good bet to something like 12 or 15 home runs a year. And so if I'm ranking Stephen Kwan this aggressively, I have Sal Frelick inside my top 150. He's due to come back from a torn UCL in his thumb. He had surgery earlier this year. He should be back at the end of June. I think it's not unlikely that we see him in Milwaukee shortly after. So proximity is big for me there in his ranking. He's a Stephen Kwan prototype with a little bit more thumb. Maybe not as great contact, but the diminishing returns on contact once you're up over even say 80% zone contact are strong. So I'm not going to quibble too much about a 93% zone contact versus a 91 or whatever the difference is there.
Right. Now that we mentioned a prospect here, are any other prospects that you found that you like more in points formats than you would in a roto format?
Yeah. Pitchers find their way higher. I think my highest ranked pitching prospect right now is Yuri Perez at 10. Gavin Williams slots in at 14. So just a little bit higher.
Yeah.
Just a little bit higher than they would, you know, would typically slot in. I probably like them the same amount as you two do. They just play up so much in the format. I think Gavin Williams is like a Gerrit Cole starter kit. That's not a comp because I would never comp him to Gerrit Cole, but very, very similar profiles. On the hitting side, I was really high on Zach Neto. I think it's incredible that he's playing even league average after such a short stint in the minors, but the contact profile there is great. Adael Amador, I just moved up. He's 22nd overall in my ranks.
Love it. Yep.
And I'm going through a rank update right now, so there should be some more really interesting names moving up. The big one that I'll drop here, Drew Gilbert, I just moved him up 54 spots. He was previously 84. He will be 30 in my next update. I know, played in the SEC, had a lot of production at Asheville. I think I'm buying in on the profile for a lot of the same reasons that I am buying Sal Frelick. So that's one. If you're listening and your league mates are not valuing Drew Gilbert as a top 50 points league prospect, jump on that right now. I have him even higher than that.
Yeah, I think he should be probably easily top 50, even in roto. And then, as I have him like at 34 right now. So Chris is a big Gilbert guy. Like we've been pretty big Gilbert guys for a bit here, and yeah, even more so in points leagues. And he's a guy that, again, he kind of falls in that prospect grouping where he doesn't have like that one loud tool, which is kind of like the prospect equivalent of what we've been talking about from the major league guys, like not being super sexy, but just so good across the board. He's gonna give you a bunch of everything. Obviously, he'll be playing in Houston, good team, good run production there, you'd assume. So yeah, absolutely love Gilbert. And I love Amador as well. He's sneaky good because, again, he's kind of boring, but that dude's approach is just absolutely phenomenal. Like, I think he has more walks than Ks in his minor league career, including this year. So, yeah, that's definitely a rock-solid guy in that format.
Some of the deeper names, now that I've done some scrolling, I'm a big Cole Young fan. I was lower on him coming into FYPDs, but he, you know, is really putting together a nice season. The power hasn't come around yet, but there's plenty of time for that. We've already talked a little bit about Tyler Locklear. That's one of my favorite players. I'm super bummed that he broke his hand or wrist on a hit by pitch a couple of days ago. I was really high on Hunker Jerpy coming out of the draft. I think like a really polished college arm with not extreme stuff, right? Like not crazy velo is going to be an attractive target for one of those guys that could move quickly. So there are names all up and down the board. I'm working through a rank update right now, but guys in the Frelick, Gilbert, Locklear, mold are the ones that I really like to target. And they usually have a pretty great price tag attached to them too.
Yeah, absolutely. Any names that you think of, Chris, that you'd like more in this format than in roto?
Let's see. I'm scrolling through. I mean, I'm not going to fail to mention Roman Anthony here, who has really good approach and contact skills.
Yep.
Always give you some Roman Anthony love. Looking in that range of like the 100, post 100 type range. I feel like Robert Hassel would have played well, but Robert Hassel's just completely fallen off at this point, which is kind of sad, but
yeah,
that's what it is.
A little bit.
I'm bummed about it. The first article I put out was my top 100. I did long write-ups on all of these guys for points leagues, and I think Hassel was in the low 20s for me. I was, you know, that's one of the profiles you look for, and he just hasn't been able to put it together.
Yeah, it's just completely faded. Let's see. I think Nick York's going to play better in points leagues. He's shown some signs of life and good contact skills there. So I like York in the points league a little better.
Yeah,
York
for sure. What about like guys? What do you think about like an Edgar Cuero back in a points format?
I'm always a little gun shy on a young catcher, especially in points formats. They don't play as much, so volume is kind of a thing for both pitchers and hitters, especially in a head-to-head league where if I can just accumulate more innings and at bats, I stand a pretty good chance to win. So young catchers aren't something that I typically invest in. Let me see where I have them on my previous update. I believe it was top 100, 91. I'm not sure how that shakes out, you know, relative to the two of you, but if I were to pick a young catcher that's not the unstoppable hype train Ethan Salas, it would probably be Edgar Cuero.
I think Dalton Rushing would be a great one too. Obviously he's not like young, he's a couple years older than those guys, but I mean the approach that Dalton Rushing has showed so far has been absolutely phenomenal.
I just pushed him up 36 spots in the update. He's now sitting at 36 overall from 72. So I did make a pretty aggressive push on Dalton Rushing.
Imagine like what were his like FYPD like ADP probably, or what of his rankings were. I mean, it got bumped up, you know, closer to like, you know, as we got further in the last year's FYPD drafts, but there's some like I had him ranked in the 40s or 50s to start, and I moved him up a bit into the 30s, but figured like he was probably being taken right around there in FYPDs. Now he's, you know, a guy that you have at 36 overall in yours. It's the ascension of Dalton Rushing has been ridiculous, but
totally crazy. Yeah. That bat is for real. You know, he was just hiding behind Henry Davis at Louisville and gold there for the Dodgers. They always seem to do it. I am never going to doubt their scouting and development. So putting a bet on Dalton Rushing was a pretty easy thing to do. I think towards the close of FYPD season, what I saw in Dynasty Points Leagues was him going around 12 to 15.
Yeah, he definitely pumped up at the end, yeah.
Back end of the first round.
Yep. You never go against the Dodgers. Never go against Baltimore. Like, I wish I had that notion. I wish I would have taken more Jackson. Like, Jackson Holliday probably would be an absolute points league beast whenever he gets up in the next year or two. He's going to be an absolute monster with the level of all-around skills plus the elite approach he's already shown. Wish I would have taken. Granted, I didn't have a lot of early FYPD picks, so I don't have too much. I think I only passed on him once, so it's only one FOMO, but man, like, if wish I had this mindset back, you know, even not like I didn't think Baltimore was a good org back then either, but man, I would have taken or even ranked Holliday over Drew Jones. I'm not saying I'm like out on Drew Jones by any means, but Holliday is so good and arguably the number one prospect in baseball now. So,
I mean, I would have been in the same boat as you. I, you know, was very loud about being a Drew Jones 1A to Jackson Holliday 1B. Yeah. I caught some flack for that. I had some interesting conversations on Twitter. I had a really good conversation with Jeff Ponce about it and how BA was kind of all over Jackson Holliday and he should play really well. But I don't think you could have had a better start out of the gates for Jackson Holliday.
That's true, yeah.
The contrast with how things have gone for Drew Jones makes that a little bit more challenging. But yeah, Jackson Holliday, I can't tell you how many times I've gone back and forth with him, and Elly De La Cruz is my number one. It sounds a little antithetical to the whole approach strikeout thing to have Elly number one, but if everything clicks for him and he's so much, you know, closer, he's going to contribute this year. I flip-flop daily on it. Right now I have Elly 1 and Jackson Holliday 2, but tomorrow I could change my mind just as easily.
Yeah, it's hard not to when Elly has like Acuna, Tatis level of upside. And yeah, obviously he's not nearly as safe as a Jackson Holliday, even though he's 2-3 years old or whatever it is. But yeah, it's a very interesting battle because they're very different players, but just like overall, they're obviously both can be absolute studs in their own way. So yeah, it's a fun battle at the top right now for sure. Now let's close out the show with, you know, the whole model of the show has been like, you know, boring, safe, not sexy. So let's close it out with probably the most boring and unsexy name we've talked about in this entire episode, and talk us a little bit of Jordan Lyles. But someone you put on here that you wanted to talk about, obviously guy that gets a lot of innings, and he's got about 180 innings each of the last 2 years. So what makes you like Jordan Lyles so much in this format?
I don't like Jordan Lyles. I think that's like kind of the point I want to drive home, is you don't have to like a player in this format for them to be valuable.
True.
Jordan Lyles has made $40 million over the course of his MLB career. It's because he eats innings so reliably. That's something that you should be looking at in points leagues. I almost forgot to bring this up. It's just like, this should really drive home the value of volume in your head-to-head points leagues. Jordan Lyles, the same Jordan Lyles that we're all watching this year, has been a top 300 player 3 out of the last 5 years in Fantrax Standard. Innings eaters are valuable. In 2022, he was 203rd overall, 21, 253. In 2020, it was the pandemic, so he only threw 57 innings. And then in 2019, he was 251 overall. So it's guys like this, the most boring, least sexy arms are the guys that you can get on extraordinary value and have, you know, be a really good back of your rotation, dependable arm. And, you know, to Jordan Lyles' credit, like I said, he's made almost $42 million doing this. So take that to heart. If you're playing in points leagues, you can find guys like this that are just largely neglected because their ratios are going to be not great. They're not going to be extremely fun to watch. They are going to be really fun when they're on your team and you're doing really well.
Wish I had made $42 million doing what Jordan Lyles is doing. I'll take that. Take that all day.
Anything I would take a lot less than that.
Yeah, absolutely. Anything you wanted to add on that, Chris?
Nope, I'm good. Nothing good to add on Jordan Lyles.
What are you talking about? You love you some Jordan Lyles. But all right, I think that's going to wrap us up, though. Before we get out of here, though, Beck, you want to pump up anything you got coming in the works for all your points league stuff over on Dynasty Dugout?
Yeah, I'm working on some rank updates. It's a lot of really long, you know, challenging work, super fun. I'm sure that, you know, two of you know that much better than I do. This is the third update of my ranks this year, getting them out to 350-ish on prospects and out to 300-ish for Dynasty this time around. Those will be out sometime in June. Over on the Dynasty Dugout, all of my written work lives over there. You can find the link to any of my work on my Twitter profile at Upper Beck or on Chris's profile. Underrated benefit there is the Discord community. I've gotten a ton of value out of that. So if you want to come hang out and talk baseball with some really, really smart folks that I'm always learning from, go check that out.
Absolutely. Again, thanks for coming on. This was a really fun episode, something we'd been wanting to do for a while, and glad we finally had the chance to do so. But so again, thanks to Beck for coming on. Follow him again at @upper_Beck on Twitter. Follow all of his stuff over on the Dynasty Dugout Substack. And again, that's going to wrap us up. Thanks to all the listeners for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. Make sure to check out both of our personal platforms, my Patreon, and obviously this Dynasty Dugout Substack for Chris and Beck as well. And join us again next time. But until then, everyone take care.